Now entering Nerdist.com.
Welcome to the JV Club. I am JV. That stands for Janet Varney. And I'm sitting here with Natasha Leggero, who I have known for the entire time I've lived here, because I think we were on a show together. We were on Jason Nash's, it's like one of the first things I did when I moved down here. I may have not even officially moved down here. I think he did a show, correct me if I'm wrong, at MBAR, which he titled Hot Bitches of Comedy. He asked a bunch of girls to do a comedy show, and he said he was calling it Hot Bitches of Comedy. And I was simultaneously furious and flattered that he asked me to do it. I was like, God, this is like, this bothered, poor Jason, I don't even know if he knows this, but it bothered me so much that I was like, I want to do the show, but I feel like this is like empowering in an insulting way. Like that Meredith Brooks song, like, I'm a bitch, I'm a lover. And you're like, ew, don't take my side. Like, don't represent women that way, because there's something about it that feels really...
Especially when it's coming from a man.
Yeah. It was like, Hot Bitches of Comedy. Jason, what are you doing?
Like, I was thinking the other day, because I was shooting something, and I was, you know how like when you shoot something, sometimes you always wish that, you know, the other like you do better on the other person's take, and you're like, oh, I just want to get one more take. I was wondering like if porn, like girls who act in porn, like do they ever want another take, or like the whole time it's just like, please, is this almost over?
You
like,
think, never, you like, know, they never, I get one, I more could have orgasmed myself better. Like, this is like a freebie.
Just one more. Like, I just feel like I could really nail it. Like, it's just like, you just must be in pain the whole time.
I don't know.
If they're maybe like that though, probably they were molested or abused.
That's, I can't help but think that. But I don't know. But at the same time, I have this thing with myself where I don't want to be... then I feel like I'm anti-female because I'm not backing up women who are saying, hey, I do this because I love to do it. And how dare you tell me you're an anti-feminist if I'm telling you that I feel empowered by it and you're telling me, no, you're not.
Right. And
then I feel like I'm not supporting my fellow woman, which feels horrible. But
and someone like Kim Kardashian, I mean, it's not like she's gonna like have discourse on something with you, so maybe that is her idea of being empowered, is, you know, she probably, yeah, probably what she puts most of her energy into is like her thighs. So showing them, I mean, maybe it does seem that, I mean, I just think we're at a weird place right now in general. Like, everybody just wants to be recorded.
Yeah.
And on TV.
Yeah.
And any way possible. I mean, people are like hoarding Taco Bell wrappers to get on TV. Like, all these people who are on these reality shows, like, have you ever seen that, like, what's it called on TLC? They have like My Strange Addiction, and these people say they're addicted to things, but I think everyone's just trying to get on TV. They're so desperate for any kind of acknowledgement.
It is. It does seem like it's about acknowledging. It's about feeling special and about feeling like you're a part of,
yeah, like
everything's just represented by the media now, so unless you're represented in that way, it's almost like you're disappearing into nothingness.
And it's like, when you can't enjoy anything without recording it. Like, if you go to a rock concert, everyone's recording it. Like, everyone wants like a image of the thing instead of the thing, so it's like they want images of themselves put out, and it's just a different time.
It makes you wonder how people are going to remember things. Are they going to even remember their experiences, or are they going to have to look at the recording to even remember it because they were so checked out during the actual experience?
Yeah. I mean, I've never been a person who takes pictures. Like, when I'm not into like pictures and video. Like, I remember on New Year's, like, we had some funny entertainment on New Year's Eve, and like everyone was recording it the whole time, and no one's ever sent me those recordings. And it kind of was distracting,
yeah,
from the event, because everyone just starts recording things. And so it's like, I don't really know that it helps.
I was thinking
I find
that
it more distracting.
Yeah, I was thinking that at the thing that popped into my head first when you just said that was when I was at the Hollywood Bowl at the National concert.
Oh, I heard of
and
that.
And it was so beautiful, and it was so great, and it was, but it But I did feel the same way. I felt like everyone was recording it, and I felt like people were live tweeting about it, and they were buried on their phones, and they were voice memo recording the music. And I just thought, are you even here? I mean, I know you're here, but it's so important to you that everyone else know you're here. And listen, I've been guilty of that. There are definitely things I've done where I'm more present to the fact that I want people, like when I went to the Harlem Globetrotters, it was as important to me to share the fact that I was at the Harlem Globetrotters as it was to be there, because that's right. kind of the reason I went, in a way, not like I didn't go to tweet about it, but I definitely was like, let's all just acknowledge that I'm having a great time at the Harlem Globetrotters.
No, I went to Richard Simmons exercise class, and like I had to get pictures and tweet them, or else it's like, what's the point?
That is wonderful. I'm so pleased that you did that. Yeah, so those, there are things like that, but when they're emotional things, like something that really is close to you in a real way, that is not Richard Simmons or necessarily the Harlem Globetrotters, all due respect to both, but if it's a concert, if it's a play, or if it's something,
on TV that, like, it's like I think that tweeting the Grammys or the Oscars, like that's kind of like a new modern way to do things, but the live shows, I think you are kind of, it's, first of all, it's disrespectful, like when I'm performing and people are tweeting and like taking pictures and just texting their friends, I guess, because you know sometimes people are just drunk. Yeah. And I'll see them in the front row and I'm like, you, I'm like right here,
oh, I just had to tell my friend something. Do you think it's going to get to a point where in 10 years a stand-up comedian isn't even going to note? It's going to be such a part. Everybody is going to be so wired in.
From their house then?
Maybe that's what it'll be when you have your podcast channel and you're just broadcasting from your webcam.
I guess. But the thing is, it's like it used to be. Hold on, I got to sneeze. Hey! Excuse me.
That, if I can observe for a moment, what I love about that sneeze is it started out really bold and masculine and ended super cute. It was like, it was two different people. That was like a schizophrenic sneeze. I loved it.
This woman was telling me the other day at this radio station, I was on the road, and she told me that she was this black woman. She's professional, and she said that, and her, she was telling me how both her dads are judges, and her sister, who is this black woman who is also a lawyer, has now quit her job as a lawyer and wants to become a country singer. And she quit her $200,000 a year job. She's like 35, and she just wrote a song called "The View from My John Deere." Oh. And she's auditioning. She's quit everything, and now she's just trying to get on America's Got Talent or one of these singing shows. And this woman is like, she's like from a middle class or a upper middle class black family of judges and lawyers. Like, she has nothing in common with a farmer, but like she just kind of saw an opening. But that's what I mean. Like, so people whose initial pulls weren't towards the arts are now everyone's trying to go towards the arts in a way. I mean, but the arts aren't even becoming like the arts. Like when you watch TV, like I was watching the other night on that TLC show, My Strange Addiction, this guy's like, I'm addicted to picking up animal carcasses from the side of the road. Like that's his addiction. Clear that he wants to be on TV, but that's not like, I mean, it's not like he's an artist.
That first golden rush when you pick up a marmot. I'm not even sure what a marmot is. When you find a perfectly intact possum that almost still looks like it has a little life left in its eyes, you are never going back, Natasha. How dare you say he's not addicted to it?
It's so sad.
Addicted to it, Natasha.
I know. By the way, though, I wanted to be on TV so bad when I was young that, like, I'm so glad there was not the internet, because my tits would be on YouTube. I would have just been like showing, because you know there's that station, what was it called, where you can like live see girls? It's like it's like a channel. Everyone was using it to jerk off.
The only channel I remember was the Spice Channel.
No, it's on the internet.
Oh.
What's that thing called? Chat Roulette. It's like one of those things. Did you ever know about that?
No.
I mean, that just turned into a complete place where people would like, perverts would go, but girls would just like, we could just be hanging out here, like let's say we're 14, because we would never do that over that age. But right. like we could be hanging out in your room and just have a channel and kind of be in our bikinis and just kind of hanging out and like, you know, drinking iced tea or whatever we wanted and just kind of flirting with whoever pops up.
Got it.
I would have totally like been doing
dirty,
that.
A dirty Brady Bunch
yeah.
opening.
So it's just. Anyway, I feel sorry for the youth. That's all.
There are so many things that we started talking about that I felt like I wanted to acknowledge that I've now forgotten. I wanted to say that that's what I remember first seeing you was at that show, and that we recently finally worked together on something, and it was really fun. And now I feel a little bit of the sense of kind of, oh, this whole time I really wish we would have been close friends. Like, oh, I
know.
All these times of seeing you and liking you, and it's hard to kind of make that leap into putting someone into your rotation or whatever.
I know. I'm really bad at that.
I am too.
I need more friends.
Well, listen, you and I are going to hit the highways and start picking up animal carcasses tomorrow. I can't wait for our own reality show. We'll be in bikinis. Picking up animal carcasses.
I'm addicted
carcasses.
To picking up animal carcasses in a bikini.
It's so specific.
But these things, it's like people. Yeah, it's just. There's going to be a name for it. We're going to be the generation.
Yeah.
Whatever that generation is. That I mean, I guess it's the YouTube generation. But it's like that's what's going to define us. Is that we have this constant desire to be like an image of ourselves projecting.
Yeah. All I can think about is the fact that I verbally acknowledge too much because we're recording this a couple of days after my first episode launched, and this cute girl said that I say yeah too much, and she's totally right because what I was trying to explain to her was because of now I'm at the place now where I just want to respond to everyone who has a critique and be nice about it and say, bear with me, I'm learning, da da da.
I don't think you say yeah too much.
Well, there's a thing about verbal cues where when you're just talking to someone, you're having a nice conversation, we're just used to acknowledging verbally like yeah or uh-huh, and when you're recording you don't have to do that because it kind of breaks up the momentum of the guest is what I've discovered, and so I'm a little self-conscious because I'm thinking to myself, let Natasha talk, don't be a puppy dog and go uh-huh.
Well, I do hope that's the worst of your critique that you get, because they get a lot worse.
I know it's gonna get worse and I'm not gonna look at anything. I'm not gonna look at any message boards or anything like that, but the stuff that comes directly to me, I can't wait for like somebody needing to tweet me to tell me that my voice makes them physically ill or whatever it is
people
that I'm gonna
really
hear.
Mean.
People can be so mean.
I would like I yeah. said, when I was 12, I would have been critiquing everybody's podcasts under an anonymous name in Rockford, Illinois.
Now that's so you're from Rockford.
I was so mean as a child.
Were you? Because I was. Yeah. It's interesting. I was going to ask you, but then I thought, oh, I hope that she doesn't get asked this all the time because this whole idea of like, oh, but the whole you're too pretty. I mean, I know you have material about it. The idea of you're too pretty to be a comedian or you're too. People want to know. People say, and I'm sure they say to you, with sincerity, how is it that you're funny? Because you seem like you would have because people think that you know you have to be damaged in some way to develop a sense of humor, and I'm not saying I disagree with that, but I think that's an easy way in for people to try to understand, or it's an easy first question to ask when they see someone who's beautiful and stylish and seems very confident and very funny and is able to sort of be critical of others in a very funny way. Don't you feel like one of the ways that people try to understand that is to say, what happened to you that made you funny?
But
because otherwise you'd be boring.
I think, yes, but I do think with most stand-up comics in particular, because improv is a little different. Improv, I think you can really just definitely have funny genes and like it be intelligent and gotten around the right group of people and still both parents loved you. But I feel like to get up on stage constantly for 10 years and endure what it takes, usually you did not get enough love from at least one of your parents. I mean, that's kind of what I think.
Yeah.
In terms of stand-ups, I'm sure there are exceptions, but it usually is like there's like a different drive behind it.
Yeah, I think
I'm not saying something terrible had to happen.
First of all, I agree with you.
There's something, like, you know, when you read about anybody, like, who was I just reading? Like Tina Fey, like she was slashed in an alley when she was young, you know, by some weirdo. Or like Sarah Silverman was like wetting the bed. Chelsea Handler, you know, I think her brother died. Like, I, it's like everybody has this like kind of fundamental dark thing.
Do you want to talk about what yours is? Do you know what yours is?
Well, I think that part of mine is just probably, you know, kind of like not growing up with a dad. You know, I think that contributes to the drive and the need for that kind of other love of random people.
And that extends to the whole business.
Trying to get people who are tweeting in the audience to pay attention to you.
Why? What's wrong with me? Why are you tweeting? That extends out to so many people, performers in the business. I appreciate you. I kind of isolating it to stand-ups, but I think so many actors and improvisers and performers and singers and all those folks.
Yeah,
there's
that drive.
To be able to take the beating and want the rewards so much, it's brutal. So there
and
has
to be.
You
have to have the talent on top of that, hopefully. But I think people, you know, there's plenty of people without talent who are able to push to the next level just from their pure ambition. And it could also be because of the damage, you know. And sometimes they don't have talent, but they're damaged enough to, like, really go after it.
I'm going to give the people at least a sliver of your teenage years in Rockford, Illinois, because you did some child acting, huh?
I was a child actress, yes.
I need to hear about that
in
stat.
The theater.
Stat. Okay.
So I was like always.
Did your parents do anything like that? I mean, I know your dad, you didn't really grow up with a dad, but.
No, my mom just signed me up once for an acting class, and then they came and found me because they found my uniform because I was like from one of the Catholic schools, so I would always go to the class. So they needed someone, so they called the school, and then I came in to audition for this like theater company that was like the only theater in our city, and there'd be professionals and amateurs. So I was one of the amateurs, but I did it for like 8 years. So I would always like leave school and just kind of hang out there. But I didn't have an introspective thought until I was 21.
So what?
So
it was
just throw that out
look
there.
At me, everybody. How
I was
can
very
I?
Very much living like a different kind of. I don't know. Like I see in some, you know, in kids sometimes there's like a natural introspection. I don't know. You probably seem like you were always introspective.
I was too introspective, and I was too. I mean, I have reams and reams of journal entries and. Just like
okay, I was
empathy,
just like
super emotional emo kid.
Oh, I was just like nature's disgusting. I hate dogs. Like I was just a bitch. Like I was just like I didn't think how my actions would. I'd steal stuff.
Oh, I stole stuff.
Yeah, like,
don't get me wrong. I stole stuff.
I just you know in terms of people's feelings, I didn't really take those into consideration.
Can I just say while I'm disturbed by that. That sounds great.
I'm sure there's a lot of people who
you
are
probably
still like
just
that.
I mean, it sounds so easy.
I know. I remember one time I had this pen pal, and my mom was like grounded me, and so I was like, I was writing. I remember I was grounded in my room, so I was like, okay, I'll write this pen pal back. And she was in Ireland, and I must have been like 12. And I remember writing to her that she was a loser because she didn't have electricity.
Natasha.
And then I think I mailed it.
Oh my gosh.
Because I was just mad at my mom. So I was like, the natural thing to do would be mean to somebody else. Because I didn't have like the empathy or introspection or understanding.
Well, what changed?
Well, I went to college. Well, first of all, I had a lot of responsibility as a child. I was kind of like in charge of babysitting and cleaning. Like I'd iron my brother's clothes and take care of them. And so I was definitely like a mom.
Yeah. Why? Your brother wore clothes that needed to be ironed?
Well,
Who was he?
I went to private school.
He was a CEO. In my world, everything is rumpled and awful unless you're a CEO.
No, it was a Catholic school. So I remember I had to like, I had a lot of chores. So I think in a way I kind of hated my life. So I was just kind of like, I need to get out of here.
Yeah.
You know, so whenever something was But at the same time, I that seed of empathy was not. I must sound like such a bitch. I try to be a nice person now.
I'm pleased that as punch that you're just letting it all hang out. That's exactly what I would want. But I'm just wondering how that fits in. I mean, I felt like I was getting my heart broken and breaking hearts and all. I mean, how did
I was doing that too.
Yeah. So you
cheating on boyfriends.
So you knew how to get. I love that everything I'm saying. This is like a game we're creating right now where I give my sort of ridiculous, over the top, empathetic, sad version of something, and then you turn it into the bitch version.
I was born.
I felt unloved. And you're like, listen, I was over everybody. I was over them.
I was very obnoxious. I had a big mouth. I was just constantly trying to kind of seize the attention.
Were you a good student, or were you?
I was a C student. Uh-huh. I was a good student in college because I found, classes that were more interesting to me. But, yeah, I was a bitch. And I remember I moved to New York, and I remember someone told me once, they're like, this is so embarrassing. They're like, when you talk like that to people, it makes them really upset.
Oh, someone had to tell you that. Someone had to say.
I didn't know. Oh. I don't know why.
Again, I'm envious.
Should someone have
Again,
told me that?
I'm envious because I was so worried about someone walking away from me thinking that I was anything other than awesome. I just wanted to please everyone.
Out there, could you please tell me whose fault that was that I didn't feel sorry for people? Like, I remember just really saying that nature was disgusting. I mean, I was kind
That's a pretty
trying,
broad statement,
but I love nature. That is,
yeah.
I mean, I was just very, I would wear black and just wanted to hang out. I just wanted to get away from my family. That was kind of my main ambition. And be an actress, but I definitely wanted to get out of my shit town, which, by the way, was rated in Forbes magazine as one of the worst places in the country to raise a family.
That feels like. Now, based on what we talked about everybody needing to be on television and getting recognized for something that's we know that Rockford exists. It won as one of the worst. Listen, we won. We are addicted to being horrible. I made it Southern, and it's Illinois.
They're usually Southern.
Good, great.
I don't want it to seem like I'm a bad person because I definitely have changed a lot, and I went to college and started learning and started having mature relationships. And
but is that part of so it seems like some of the kind of the jokes that you do or the characterizations that you bring that people remark upon that's kind of unique to your stand-up is born out of that sort of making fun of the idea of just being above it all and the idea of the old the teenage you that was sort of whatever.
Yeah, very heartless. And I remember that the first part I played, and I didn't even know what a play was. And when they called me in to be in this, semi-professional.
Sorry, you didn't grow up in a place where you didn't know what a play was.
I knew what a play was, but I had never been in a play.
Okay.
So what was happening was, I should clarify, it was being adapted as we were rehearsing. So every day there was 10 new pages.
Ooh.
So I didn't understand. So it keeps happening. We just keep getting pages. I just didn't know.
That makes sense.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
It was great expectations. And the part I was playing was this young Estella, who's Miss Havisham's really heartless child. And I think that part of me, just because I was so young and I loved doing that so much, that part of me just kind of retained that persona.
Wow, isn't that interesting?
So I just kind of always associated myself with that too.
So I think that's a really interesting insight.
So it's a big influence. Yeah. So yeah. I'm sure that was. That mixed with Debbie Harry.
Those are two really great, interesting ice queen, very magnetic, kind of role models. I don't know what my version of that would be. The only thing I flashed to when you were talking about that and the age that you were was when I was in fifth grade, I was in a play about immigrants coming to the United States. That's my version.
Russian woman with a papoose.
I played the mom because I was tall. So I always play the mom because immediately that somehow defines age and bless your heart. But it was called Oh my gosh, I'm blanking. Anybody, any of my friends who I've known since elementary school, it was a play about Ellis Island and it was a musical. And I remember some of the lyrics to a song. And one of the songs was, it was a song called Officer, Officer. And it was a song about how you don't want to show that you're sick or weak because they'll turn you away at Ellis Island.
That's what they were doing as a musical.
As a musical
kids?
in fifth grade. I don't think I had any songs I got to sing all by myself, which I was very sad about. And so the reason I remember this is because I was so proud to have a line to sing alone that it's like cemented in my head, a la Your Young Estella. My version better not hack, hold it back. One little cough and they'll send you off. Better not sneeze, don't you wheeze. Or they might think you have a rare disease.
So basically you're suppressing your whooping cough, is it? You just got off a boat from Croatia.
Yes.
And that's basically defined your persona.
Please. That's why I'm so empathetic. Oh my god.
Woo. It's interesting what your early influences are.
I know it. Yours are much cooler than mine.
I'm nice now. I really am.
Well, what do you I try to
consider people, I guess.
Speaking as someone, you do a Chelsea show all the time, and I did it a few times. And then I also felt, I started to feel a little guilty about, I realized that I was writing jokes to kind of skirt around making fun of the people, which is the whole point of the panel and of those tidbits, because I just became paranoid. Like, you know, Chelsea said something about a friend of mine once, and he was really upset about it. And there was like a public thing where she kind of apologized, and then he was cool with it. And I just started to feel like I am opening myself, because on a good side, it's kind of fearless, because I do feel like you're sort of opening yourself up for, well, I'm being shitty about someone else, so I guess I have to be cool with people being shitty about me. And I think that scared me. I thought, who am I to be able, but I don't think that when I see you on it, they're doing it. I just think you're funny. But for me, from the other side, I just felt like, oh God, I'm so afraid that someone's going to, you know.
That is to me one of the hardest things about comedy, is that, you know, and a lot of people would say, and a lot of people successfully, I mean, someone like Louis C.K., his comedy is almost all making fun of himself, his situation, a lot of it.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's people who critique society a bit more, like, you know, someone like Doug Stanhope, or, you know, it's more outwardly against what's wrong in general. And I tend to go towards that, you know, kind of in the way Bill Hicks did. I mean, obviously that's like the highest example of it, but, you know, just in terms of the style of comedy.
The tag for the podcast is, listen to Natasha say that she's the next Bill Hicks.
But I'm just saying it's a different type of comedy, and I get jealous of people who can really use themselves. It's just not how, there's definitely like problems I have with myself, but in terms of like comedy, I always want to aim it more at society.
Yeah. It's interesting. I'm thinking to myself, I'm much more comfortable like ripping on myself.
Yeah, a lot of people are. And I think that comedy works really great. And then there's also like, you know, nonsense comedy. Not nonsense, but like someone like Zach Galifianakis or Sarah Silverman. It's just funny and fun, and it's not coming from like some crazy personal place or feeling a lot of times.
Right.
I mean, it can, but, you know, it's more like mock.
Yeah.
But so it's hard sometimes, because I feel like if the butt of the joke doesn't, like, I used to make fun of, when I didn't have any money, I was constantly railing on poor people, because I was like living in like the worst situation, and I hated how people acted. And like now as I get older, I'm like, I realize that they're not the problem. And so I don't want to like make fun of people who are getting ripped off by corporations. I mean, the corporations are the issue right now, and they're the ones who are like rigging the whole game and making everyone suffer and changing the rules. And I think society is like really suffering. And so,
would you say that society is having to iron shirts of the CEOs of the corporations?
Yes, they are. Exactly. And people can't even afford to take care of themselves. And everyone's just like figuring out ways, the rich people are figuring out ways to legally rig the game. And so, you know, it's not right from like the butts of comedy when you're making fun of society, it changes.
Yeah.
Personally. So for me, I'm going through a time where it's hard for me to even come up with jokes because I don't want to like rag on the wrong people. In terms of celebrities, though, I think a lot of these people who are out there so much, they kind of thrive on that. I mean, and I try to do it in a clever way. Like, I think there's no one more banal and reprehensible than Perez Hilton, because that's someone who acts like they're really talented, who has nothing clever to say, and it's just kind of sad, you know. But anyway.
What I flashed to at just in the moment when you finished speaking was that I was going to ask you if you have stayed friends with friends that you had in high school when you think of yourself as being kind of a different person than you
yes.
are now.
Yes.
And do they see the difference, and do you guys joke about it, or do you, you know, what are your relationships like with people that you were friends with in high school? Or are they like, Tasha, you're the same person. Like, don't be so hard on yourself, or God, you really changed when you went to college. Like, you just kind of became softer, or you kind of...
I read this great quote the other day. I'm trying to think of what exactly it was, but it was saying something like, you know, the relationship between lovers would be like, you know, naked bodies or something. And then the relationship between friends is naked personalities.
Mm.
And I liked that because it really reminded me of how I am with those people. Because you can kind of, there's no, they've known you for so long that, and it's different than parents, you know, your oldest friends, like you can kind of really rest when you're around them, I feel like, and just really be like a true version of yourself without pretensions or, you know, any of your achievements or failures. It's just kind of more real. But yes, I do have a few people like that, and we'll make fun of it because we're both like, how could we just, like, I remember this, my best friend who lives here, we were best friends in seventh grade, like, we stayed at this woman's house that was her parents' friend, and we broke into their mother's jewelry, and took some of her jewelry. Like, this was her parents' friends, and we just thought it was cool because the yeah. jewelry looked good.
Yeah.
But, like, so we basically, stole from her parents' friends. It's just, like, so dark. Like, I would yeah. never do that now. It's so, like... low class and sad. And but yeah, so we'll make fun of like how, or I remember, and this is another friend, they're the same friend, I remember my bus driver was like, we had this like bus driver that we would totally boss around, and this girl, I remember we decided,
wait, how do you boss around a bus driver?
Was, you just like, you, tell her she's an asshole, like, I don't know, like she's in a bad mood or she's mean, so you're mean back. So
I don't know why I was imagining you making her run errands with you because she has a vehicle.
I actually have a picture of me when we capsized her bus. So I should send that to you. And it's me driving the bus. But I remember blindfolding her, the bus driver. And so she had to pull off on the side of the road. And then my friend and I would like scream out the window that we were getting abducted. And like, it seems like a different person.
Wait, you...
And then
wait.
I remember the bus driver started crying.
I was
and then
about to
quit.
Go back up. Beep, beep, beep. Because it's a bus situation. Wait, you went. Wait, you.
I
did
told
you creep
I was a dick.
Up behind her while she was driving?
I thought it would be
place
funny.
A blindfold on her.
Yeah,
and she was like, I can't see.
Yeah, she
and
had to pull over. We thought it'd be funny.
About like having no sense of your own mortality or any.
Wish I was more like that now.
Oh my
but
gosh.
So yeah, I mean, it, obviously that woman was probably having a very hard time in her life.
Oh,
just
no.
trying to make ends meet being a bus driver. She must have like yelled at me. I'm sure she did something to warrant that. Like, she obviously wasn't just sweet. But like, yeah, when my friend and I talk about that, we're like, what the fuck was wrong with us?
Oh,
sorry. I don't know if I'm not supposed to swear on this.
No, it's okay. I do. And I, and just what you said about missing that fearlessness, I do. I kind of miss when you, and for those of you, if there are young teenage women listening to this, I mean, the little bit of asshole in us there, I could use a little bit of that in this business that we're in. And
I think a good way to do it, like this happened to me by accident, because I was in St. Louis last week, and this is kind of a funny story. So my aunt decided she was going to drive up from Rockford, Illinois to come see me with her new family. And so there's like eight of them, and it's a 4.5 hour drive. And I had already got my ticket. I'm playing a casino. I didn't need the added stress of having 10 members of my family in the audience, but they came anyway. And so afterwards I had like, I didn't have time. I had like stuff I was working on and I had to be up the next morning. So I was like, I can't really hang out with you guys. So my aunt comes back with her new husband up back to my room. She keeps talking. So finally I offer them some wine. And then her husband starts making racial slurs. And he starts, what did he call? He started calling black people woolies.
What? Where does that even come from?
I don't know. It's like some...
Oh, no.
Some racial... I don't know what the fuck. And I was like, okay, guys, time to leave. And I... Because I was like... they were already infringing on my time. And then it's like... I just felt like someone came into my room and just like let this like terrible stink bomb... You know? So yeah. I was like, get out. So I made them get out. And then I texted my friend who was opening for me. I'm like, those assholes finally left. You know? And I was like, I hate family. My aunt's husband was just... you know, making racial slurs. And I accidentally sent that text to my aunt.
Oh!
But then I started so I was just going to let it go. But then I was like, and I knew I could confuse her with texts because I was like, she probably doesn't know you can accidentally send a text to someone else. So she probably thinks I'm just sending it to her. So I started bombarding her. I'm like, he shouldn't have said that. That's absolutely unacceptable. And like, I really like went off on, like I'd sent like 10 texts about how wrong that was. And she called me and we talked about it and he felt really bad. But, you know, just being able to tell someone what you think, because it was like by accident, because like, yeah. I was just going to be like, no, I'm not going to, you know, I'm just going to complain about it to someone else. But just, I wish I could have had like the integrity to call him up and say, if you're ever going to be around me, don't talk like that. And he said, I'm a racist. So it's like, if you want to be a racist, I don't have to be near you. I'm certainly not going to invite you into my room
right.
for like an hour and a half. Like, but it just felt so good to really tell someone what you think. And I don't know how to get in that mode where I could do that and not have it be some grave accident.
That's so interesting. And I'm sure someone would argue somewhere in your subconscious, you knew that you were accidentally texting your
aunt. I really did.
Because you did need to say.
I didn't. Because I was texting two people that week, you know, or that, you know, like when you're on the road. So it was like, I was thinking about her. So I just texted her.
Yep.
But, you know, and she emailed me the other day. She's like, you know, my husband, I don't want to say his name. I'm sure they don't listen to this podcast. My husband, he hasn't talked for 3 days. He feels so depressed. You know, like it really affected them that I responded so crazily on my text. So, you know, why not try to really make a difference and say what you think without being like overly crazy emotional? But I don't know. That's kind of, after that happened, it felt good. And I want to do more stuff like that.
Do you feel like, this is kind of something that I sort of stumble through from podcast to podcast, but it's so, because I've never pretended, I don't pretend that this podcast is about, particularly for younger listeners, that it's about, hey, we've got it all figured out. We're telling you all the things we did right and all the things we did wrong, and you should do exactly what we say. Not at all. Because I remember too well being a teenager and just being like, I'm going to do what I'm
going to
do.
I'm going to take pictures of my naked body and I would get them developed and then give them to my boyfriend.
Did you really?
Yes. Yeah, so when I was like 15, but now I would put them on the internet.
Right, right.
So I'm so happy that I just think like we don't even know because there's just a different right. time now.
I guess this is coming back to it. This is sort of the stumbling block is
I don't want it to be like, if you could give advice to someone, that's not what it is. I guess it's just this. It's just kind of airing it out. It's just saying, you know what? I did this, and guess what? Now I think I was an asshole, and you're going to think you were an asshole too.
I know.
And maybe somehow that gets in there, and your jerky side kind of tones down, and you sort of hear that, or you respond to it. Because I don't know how to change the course of, and I think you and I were joking about it when I asked you to do the podcast, like who are the role models for young women, and who's to say that we should be those role models? Certainly not me, but somebody that's more in the public eye like you, like, is it your responsibility? Or, and I think you made a joke, like, God knows they need them, you know, but I don't know.
But God knows they need them.
Let's give the children something to have hope for. I'm lying on the floor now because I'm so relaxed with Natasha that it feels right to just lie down yet still hold this microphone.
I just hope I don't tell another wretched story from my past.
Well, even what you just said about taking pictures of your naked body, like I don't think that I thought I was sexy, and I don't think. Which isn't to say that I wasn't maturing faster than maybe I should have in other ways. And I lost my virginity at 16. So that's not like super early or super late, I don't think. I mean, that feels about... Is it on the early side?
I think so.
I
mean, I was 15, 16. I thought
yeah, I mean, I have friends who were in their 20s when they did. I have friends who were like 13 when they did, which seems crazy for...
13?
For our generation, yeah. But that's very early still. I mean, I... think, but
there's really a chance for people to be smarter now than we were. I think everyone's evolving.
Yeah,
because there's just more information out there.
I hope that's true. I feel like kids are having sex so young.
Well, but sex is going to change. Like, you know, there's going to be gay marriage soon. There's going to be more gay parents. It's, you know, people are going to be. I think people are going to repress being gay much less. So, you know, imagine in 20 years if like a quarter to a half of the parents in a classroom are gay, then the kids will be thinking more about like, well, am I going to have a woman or a man? Like, I think that sex is going to become a little more homogenized.
Mm.
This is like, you know, 20 years down the road. Like,
right.
It's not going to be so different. And maybe it'll just be part of it that people have sex early. It'll be less taboo. Maybe.
Right. And then there's the question of,
I mean, when you have a baby, that's pretty, you know, that's where it gets a little.
Right. I don't know, particularly for women, sorry, but, if having sex, even if it's safe sex and there aren't the same kinds of risks or ramifications, and the idea of it being less taboo, I still don't really know if I'm certain about when emotionally you're ready as a girl. I'm not sure.
I know. When I had sex, I just started bawling.
You know, I mean, I'm very grateful that the guy that I kind of, you know, I lost my virginity to and then continued to have sex with for a few months before we broke up, which, by the way, felt like we were dating forever back then because, and it was like 2 months.
Do you think there's anybody out there who's like, my first time was still the best sex I've ever had?
I don't know. I hope so.
I guarantee it's not.
I guarantee you're right. The best you ever had. It went downhill from the very first clumsy time.
I mean, the point of that is that I do think that probably it was just good to get it out, you know, because then you don't have the stigma of being a virgin, the stress of that.
And now I'm going to name by first and last name the name of every person I've ever slept with. Can you imagine? What if I sprung that on you and you had no idea? I was like, and now, as we do in every episode of the podcast, you will list off in order, first, last, and middle name if possible, every person you've ever had sex with. And you were just, people have been doing that? Yeah, Natasha, every guest I've had has done it to a letter.
I've only had one night stand, thank God.
I haven't had many either.
I don't know his last name, though.
What was his first name?
Grisha.
Whoa!
He was German. He was hot.
Oh, That's the only German.
Can I just say one thing before we go? Because I feel like I really seem like I'm a bitch.
I don't think that, but you can say whatever
when
you want.
When I was growing up, I just felt like, and everyone must feel like that, like there's so much you're just reacting to that you're not able to like think of the world and society as a whole, and like your like if you're hurting people. Like for me, it was so much about just like getting out of where I was.
I think that's true for a lot of people.
Yeah. So it's like you have so much on your plate, like just, and then you've got school, and these people are being assholes at school, and then your parents, and then your friends will ignore you. Remember, like when friends would ignore you? It's like you
have I would not go back to a place where I had to go through that feeling for any amount of money.
Like just one morning, three people would just decide we're going to ignore you. So then, like all week, no one talks to you. It's like those kinds of things. Like you're dealing with so much, and then you might like someone, and so it's like how can you even start like considering other people's. I wasn't able to like think of anything.
No, I appreciate you saying that, and I encourage the listener to not
the listener, like there's only one.
Yeah, if we're lucky. I think I picked that. I'm 100% sure I picked that expression up from Jimmy Pardo. I'm sure that he likes to refer to the listener.
Oh, okay.
We'll be accepting your comments, your questions. Natasha and I will answer any and all questions. I don't know what forum that will exist on.
Unless
but
you
we'll
live
do
in
it.
Ireland, because you probably don't have electricity.
I cannot believe that you posted and mailed a letter to someone.
Can you imagine this girl in this village being so excited for her American pen pal, and then it's just like some girl telling her she's a bitch? She probably still never set foot in America, that poor Irish peasant.
Well, I can speak on behalf of the immigrant.
I wish I knew her name. I'd send her a letter now. Listen, you know what? Maybe my mom didn't mail it. I mean, if my mom was smart, she should have proofread my correspondences, my overseas correspondences, and not just let me put anything in the international post that I wanted.
Listen, I have portrayed an immigrant, and I can only say... that I've heard that in America, the streets are lined with gold. And in some places in Ireland, they don't have electricity. And I guess I relate more to the Irish immigrant than I do to the American living in her precious, horrible city with ironing her brother's crisp Catholic shirts. I mean...
In a black cape. With eyeliner,
and high platform nude shoes. Underneath, taking pictures of herself, spreading open her cape, and giving them to her boyfriend. Ladies, and from what I understand, some gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the JV Club with the wonderful Natasha Leggero.
If you need any clarification, just email me.
All clarification will be provided after the fact. Please send us your questions, comments. And coupons. I need to have some Groupons and coupons associated with this podcast. We will leave you with that. And well, goodbye. As always, the JV Club theme song is Before We Were Brittle, courtesy of the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.